Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to Mountain Radio Astronomy. My name is Sue Ann. I'll be your host this morning. And for today's program, we have with us Dr. Jim Condon, who is an astronomer at the National Radio Astronomy Observatory in Charlottesville, Virginia. He's here as part of a conference, actually, so he's taking some time out to talk to us about one of his research interests. Today we're going to be talking about the universe as a whole. We're going to be talking about its fate, perhaps, and we'll start with Cosmology 101. Tell us what we know about the way the universe began, and just give us the basics first, and then we'll talk about the new stuff.
The most basic fact about the universe is that on very large scales, it's extremely simple and uniform, so that what would appear to be a very difficult subject is actually quite simple. And if you average over a region of space that's large enough in the universe, you can characterize it by some simple numbers, like its temperature, or its density, or its pressure. And using that simple characterization, we can talk about the beginning of the universe in an equally simple way. It started out extremely dense and extremely hot at a time that was called the Big Bang, which is actually remarkably well understood. It took place about 13.7 billion years ago, and at the time the universe was completely uniform. There weren't any galaxies, stars, anything. It was just an extremely hot ionized gas. And it expanded very rapidly and has been expanding ever since. So the universe we live in now is much more complicated, because that ionized gas gradually turned into neutral atoms, which collected by gravity, essentially, into stars and the galaxies that exist today.
What's our evidence that leads us to believe the universe at its very beginning was a dense object and has been expanding ever since? How do astronomers piece that together?
The best evidence for this hot Big Bang starting the universe is that we can still see the radiation from that Big Bang. Anything that's extremely hot emits electromagnetic radiation. For example, the sun emits light because it's hot, has a temperature of several thousand kelvins. The universe started out very, very hot and remained ionized until its temperature dropped down to about 3,000 degrees, at which point atoms started to form and the universe became transparent. At that time, the universe was emitting a lot of light, which filled the universe completely. Since then, the universe has expanded by a factor of over 1,000, and that light has effectively cooled down to become radio waves, and we can still detect those radio waves. It's called the cosmic microwave background radiation. And the only plausible explanation for that cosmic microwave background radiation is that the universe started out very hot.
Okay. Now, you said the universe is thought to be 13.7 billion years old. How do we come to a conclusion like that?
Well, the nice thing about this cosmic microwave background radiation is that it preserves history for us. When we look at something that's very far away, we see what it looked like a very long time ago. Radio waves are like light waves. They travel through space at the speed of light. So if we see a star, say, that's 10 light years away, what we're seeing is how that star looked 10 years ago. When we see the cosmic microwave background radiation, we're seeing what the universe looked like when it was only 400,000 years old, which is very young compared with its present age of over 13 billion years. We can tell how far away that radiation is as well. It's ironic that among all of the distances that astronomers can measure, one of the best measured distances is the biggest distance of all. How far light had to go from when it was emitted, when the universe was only 400,000 years old, to get to us now. And if you say, how far is that? The answer is, that light must have been traveling for 13.7 billion years.
Tell us how an astronomer measures that. You use telescopes, you're looking at light or other forms of electromagnetic radiation that come to us. How do you get a number out of your observations?
Well, this particular one is gotten from an unusual way. We understand just from basic physics what the universe was like during the first few hundred thousand years. Again, the reason it's so easy to understand is that the universe was much simpler then. It was very, very uniform. So during this time of the Big Bang, the matter that was there and the light that was there interacted. And matter would start clumping together but be resisted by the pressure of the light, which actually dominated the pressure in those days. So that it's possible to calculate just from basic physics that at the time the universe became transparent, it was about 400,000 years old, that there should be structure in the universe forming whose size is approximately 400,000 years times the speed of light, or 400,000 light years. We can measure how big an angle those blobs of bright radiation are today. And then just using geometry, knowing how big something appears to be an angle, and we know how big it actually is, we can compute how far away it must be. So that this is actually quite a secure and solid number. When I say the universe is, say, 13.7 billion years old, the uncertainty in that is only about 0.2 billion years. So it isn't a wild guess the way a lot of numbers that astronomers talk about are.
This number has been a quest of astronomers for a long time to try to come up with how old the universe is using lots of different measurements. So it's only been in the last 10 or 15 years, would you say, that this number has, 13.7 billion years, has become solidified as a pretty...
Right. That number didn't get well known until about 3 years ago, in fact, when the WMAP satellite, a satellite that was designed to study the microwave background radiation, and is still out there orbiting beyond the moon studying that same radiation.
Tell us about this satellite that's up there, and how does it make these measurements?
Okay.
Is this a radio experiment?
That's right. This is a radio experiment. WMAP is an abbreviation for Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe. And it's a small radio telescope that was sent into space and is orbiting nearly a million miles away from the Earth, past the moon, in order to be free of the effects of the Earth's atmosphere and from man-made interference. And all it's been doing for the last few years is scanning around the sky and measuring the intensity of the radio waves that were produced by the Big Bang. And the radio waves are the same as would be emitted by an object whose temperature is only 3 degrees above absolute zero. That's the temperature of the universe right now. And so they've been very carefully mapping out the anisotropy in this 3 degree radiation. Anisotropy meaning its change with direction on the sky. So they can see little changes in the brightness from one point in the sky to the next. And those little changes in brightness really are the historical record of what the universe was like when it was only 400,000 years old. So that this satellite, even though it's a tiny little radio astronomy experiment, is probably the most important observatory in the solar system right now.
So I want to broach the topic of dark energy, because you gave a talk here some time ago about this fairly new development in astronomy. So tell us what the universe is made of, and then we'll get into a little bit more detail about dark energy.
Okay. This is another result that's being nailed down by the WMAP satellite studying the microwave background radiation. As I said, the WMAP satellite tells us with high precision how far away this point was that we see when the universe was only 400,000 years old and the radio waves have just gotten to us. We know today how fast the universe is expanding. This can be measured independently by astronomers who look at nearby galaxies and see how fast the nearest galaxies are moving away from us. It turns out that the age of the universe and the size of the universe, determined by the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe, isn't exactly what we would expect in terms of what we know about the current expansion rate of the universe. We thought that the universe started out expanding quite rapidly, and then would gradually slow down. You can think of the Big Bang as say, a firecracker exploding out in space, and little bits of the firecracker go shooting off in all directions. If the firecracker were the only thing in the universe, you would also expect that the little bits of the firecracker would be pulling on each other by gravity. And in our own universe, that same gravitational force should be quite important. Galaxies that are flying apart after the Big Bang should gradually be slowing down in this expansion because of gravity. And it turns out that the big surprise that has just been dawning on astronomers in the last few years is that there's something else beside gravity acting on these galaxies, that in fact they're not slowing down. The expansion of the universe is actually speeding up. And this is where dark energy comes in. If you say, how does gravity really work on the very largest scales? It doesn't obey Newton's laws of gravity that simply say massive objects attract each other. When Einstein revised gravity with his general theory of relativity, he found that not only does mass cause objects to attract each other, but pressure has an effect on gravity as well. And pressure is a term that is used to describe particles or energy that are particles that are moving at nearly the speed of light. So ordinary matter like us is just plain matter and exerts essentially no pressure in this sense. Light or electromagnetic radiation or radio waves is an example of relativistic particles, light particles or photons, that do exert pressure. Ordinary light exerts a positive pressure and in fact acts just like matter in causing a gravitational attraction. So a universe filled with light would also decelerate in its expansion. In order to explain an accelerating universe, we need a mysterious form of energy that actually has a negative pressure.
Which
actually acts like a negative gravity. Okay. It's part of Einstein's theory of gravity, but it has the opposite sign, so it's completely unfamiliar to us because it pushes things apart instead of pulling them together. And the dark energy is very mysterious. About all we know about it, I would say, is that it causes the universe to expand more rapidly. It's called dark because we can't see it. It doesn't interact with ordinary matter. It doesn't interact with light. It doesn't reflect light. It doesn't emit light. It's just dark, okay? And it's energy in the sense that it completely fills space and it consists of hypothetically completely relativistic particles moving at nearly the speed of light. But we have no idea at all what they are.
Why is it that universe is accelerating in its expansion rather than decelerating? Is that from the WMAP data, or is that from looking at galaxies to see what their redshifts are, and how do you know this?
There are really two independent lines of evidence that the universe is accelerating in its expansion. And one is from the microwave background data itself compared with the current rate of the expansion of the universe determined from measurements of nearby galaxies moving away from us. The other is that there are explosions of stars called supernovae type 1a that can be observed throughout most of the universe because they're so bright. And knowing how fast those explosions are moving away from us in distant galaxies and how bright those explosions are, we can compute a rough history of the expansion of the universe. And this history of expansion is that when the universe was young, dark energy was relatively unimportant, and gravity dominated, so that the universe indeed decelerated as expected. But when the universe got to about half of its present age, the universe had expanded so much that the matter was now very diffuse. Galaxies are far apart. The gravitational force that they exert on each other keeps getting weaker and weaker as the universe gets bigger and bigger. But this dark energy doesn't change. The force that it exerts, its tendency to accelerate the universe, seems to be independent of time. So as gravity gradually weakened in its influence, dark energy took over, and its desire to cause the universe to expand became dominant when the universe was only about half its present age. And since the universe will continue to expand indefinitely, this acceleration will continue indefinitely, and in the distant future will completely dominate the future of the universe.
Good grief. T- tell us what your role is in all of this. You are an observer. You're going to be conducting experiments. You are already to put a little piece of the puzzle into place.
The experiment that we're going to do here using the 100-meter diameter Green Bank radio telescope is we're going to try to see just how far away are the nearby galaxies and how fast they're moving away from us. Right now, the best estimate of how fast the universe is expanding right now comes from observations made with the Hubble Space Telescope. There was a Hubble key project that measured what was called the Hubble constant, how fast a galaxy moves away from us in the nearby neighborhood. Those measurements rely on a fairly shaky chain of reasoning and are somewhat uncertain, so that we can't really say how fast the universe is expanding to better than maybe 10%. In order to understand the influence of dark energy and how much it's accelerating the universe now, we would like to know how fast the universe is expanding right now to an accuracy of between 1 and 3%. We think we can do that with measurements that are centered on observations with the Green Bank Telescope. What we'll use to measure the distances to nearby galaxies are very unusual galaxies that have supermassive black holes in their center, Seyfert galaxies. These are black holes in the centers of a small fraction of galaxies that are extremely bright because matter falling in them releases gravitational energy and heats up the surrounding area, so that around these massive black holes there will be a ring of clouds containing water vapor. And at radio wavelengths, these heated water clouds actually emit maser emission, somewhat like, say, the lasers in light wavelengths that you see as sources of light. These masers are detectable radio sources with the Green Bank Telescope. So for the next couple of years in the winter, when the observing weather is good, we'll use the Green Bank Telescope to detect masers in galaxies that are nearer than about 100 million light years from us. Or several hundred million years, light years actually, about 100 megaparsecs. Then we will follow up these masers with extremely fine resolution, extremely sharp vision, using a combination of the Green Bank Telescope and 10 other NRAO telescopes that are spread across the United States, all the way from St. Croix and the Virgin Islands out to Mauna Kea in Hawaii. This super telescope, consisting of the Green Bank Telescope and the 10 other smaller dishes, has the resolving power of an imaginary telescope whose size equals the size of the United States, okay?
Including Hawaii.
Including Hawaii and St. Croix. So that we'll be able to look in with very sharp vision, 100 times or 1,000 times sharper than the Hubble Space Telescope, for example, at the little molecular water vapor rings in these Seyfert galaxies. And by measuring their angular sizes, how big they appear to be, and other properties of that ring, like how fast it's moving, we should be able to use just plain simple geometry to determine how far away galaxies are up to a few hundred million light years from the Earth. We can also measure how fast they're moving away from us by their Doppler shift. This Maser line doesn't appear at the frequency that we expect if it were at rest, but at a lower frequency because the galaxies are moving away from us. The amount by which the frequency is reduced tells us how fast the galaxy is moving away. So for these galaxies, we know how far away they are and how fast they're moving away. That tells us how fast our region of the universe is expanding. And since the universe is really the same everywhere at any one time, it tells us how fast the whole universe is expanding right now. And that depends on the initial conditions in the universe, sort of how energetic the explosion was, and how much dark energy has influenced the expansion since then. So with enough precision in this measurement, we hope to be able to say exactly how much dark energy there is, and maybe even something about whether or not the dark energy is truly a cosmological constant that doesn't change with time. It appears right now that of all the mass energy in the universe, the dark energy accounts for 3/4 of it.
So if you were going to make a pie chart and divide up this pie chart into the constituents of the universe, you've got normal matter like us and stars and galaxies. How much of the universe is made up of that?
About 4%. So we're just the tail on the dog.
Okay. And then dark energy is?
Dark energy is about 74%.
Wow.
And the rest, which is about a quarter, is dark matter. Dark matter is pretty strange in itself, but nowhere near as strange as dark energy. Dark energy, we know it's there. We know it completely dominates the universe. But we say, what is it? Is it some mysterious force or mysterious particle that physicists don't understand yet? Physicists are having a big problem with this, and that means it's a great opportunity for better understanding the universe. And the best analogy I can give for the importance of the problem of dark energy is to imagine going back 100 years. 100 years ago, when physicists tried to explain how much light should a hot object emit, like a glowing charcoal, they came up with a theory that didn't work. And the reason it didn't work is that it predicted that a hot object should emit an infinite amount of energy. Okay, obviously wrong.
Right.
And just about 100 years ago this year, Max Planck realized that he could solve this problem and get the correct answer for how much light a hot object should emit by assuming that radiation is quantized. That is, only certain discrete amounts of energy are permitted in light. You can't just have any old amount of energy in light. And that solved the problem, got himself a Nobel Prize, and led to the golden age of physics in the 1920s, when quantum mechanics finally was able to say things about why the everyday world is the way it is now. 100 years ago, people couldn't explain simple observable things like how much light should a hot charcoal emit. And now physics has got to the point where it's pretty well solved all of those problems for the day-to-day world. Those things are
understood. For that 4%.
For our 4%
of
the universe. Right. But
the
remaining 74%, I think, is a problem that's analogous in importance to Planck's problem was 100 years ago. When physicists try to explain what is the dark energy, they have an explanation. They say to the astronomers, oh yeah, we're not surprised that you found dark energy. We thought about this a long time ago. These are quantum fluctuations of the vacuum. Our theory of quantum mechanics that followed from Planck's observations says that there's really no such thing as an absolutely empty, perfect vacuum. The uncertainty principle of quantum mechanics says that at any time in a perfect vacuum, little particles or particles of light, neutrinos, whatever, can pop into existence for a short period of time and then disappear again. And these virtual particles are actually necessary to explain a lot of things we observe in day-to-day life. They must really be there. The physicists then calculate, well, how many of these little particles are necessary to explain everyday life, as it were, and what is the energy density of those little particles? And they calculate that up, and they make an error that's almost as bad as the old infinity that was gotten for the brightness of a piece of charcoal. Their estimate for the energy density of the vacuum, that would be a perfect explanation for dark energy, except for the fact that it's 10 to the power 120 too high.
Ooh.
That is 10 times 10 times 10, 120 times.
Yes.
So everybody immediately says, we have a big problem again, exactly like Planck did 100 years ago. Now it's at a much higher level now. We're explaining something very mysterious that's just diffused and spread throughout the universe.
That's very difficult to,
nobody really knows what
it
is.
Yeah.
Right. It's observable only through its effects on the expansion of the universe. It's the province of astronomers, not physicists in the laboratory yet. But it's understood that until we figure out what this is and come up with a much better answer for what its energy density is, that it's the biggest outstanding problem in physics today. In fundamental physics, we're really no longer trying to explain why charcoal glows so bright or something as simple as that. But these big problems of how did the universe form, why is it the way it is now, and what will its ultimate fate be? And there, dark energy is clearly the central problem.
The problem of this century, maybe even.
Right. So.
Awesome.
It's the problem. It really is, the ball is in the court of astronomers right now to at least provide some data to help say more about what the dark energy is like so that the physicists who are working on the theory of dark energy at least know what goal they're aiming for. And it's very nice then that the Green Bank Telescope plays an absolutely central and unique role in being able to determine the expansion of the universe and tell us more about the dark energy that affects its expansion. And if we didn't have the Green Bank Telescope and the very long baseline array of smaller telescopes across the country, this problem could not be addressed by any other observing facilities right now.
So well, good luck.
We have to do it that way.
But it's great to have a big, juicy problem in physics to work on, isn't it?
That's right. So it's a big problem. We can say that we really fell flat on our face calculating what the energy density of the dark energy should be. But every disaster like this to physicists means there's a great new theory out there, a much deeper understanding of the universe waiting to happen. And it's the sort of thing that comes around once per century or something like that, and was completely unpredictable. For example, when the Green Bank Telescope was built, we didn't have the slightest idea that this would end up being one of the important projects that it would be working on.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks so much for being with us today, Jim. It's always a pleasure to have you explain the mysteries of the universe to me, and I hope our listeners out there enjoyed it as well.
Thank you, and I hope they don't think they understand the mysteries of the universe from that, because I sure don't, and we have a lot of work to do yet.
And we thank Dr. Jim Condon for being with us this morning. That wraps up our show for the month of December. Join us next month for Mountain Radio Astronomy. This is Sue Ann Heatherly.